Hi, everyone. I'm Mike Gasowitz, CEO of Tricert Financial Group. Welcome to a special episode of In Focus. We're going to talk about trusts and the changes that have been made by CRA. We're going to talk a lot about this. Joining us today to give us some background, I'm really excited to be joined by Connor Gates. Connor is a CPA accountant and a partner at one of our partner accounting firms here at Tricert. Welcome, Connor.
Thanks, Mike. Happy to be here. Great to talk about more in the afternoon of tax and all these fun changes that are coming through.
Exactly. Yes, CRA, sadly, I wouldn't say one of our favorite topics, but probably one of the more important topics.
And necessary topic today.
And necessary topic. So why don't we, let's start with what are the changes? I understand it's about reporting. So why don't we start there? What are the reporting changes being made for trusts this year?
Yeah, so there's been some pretty widespread changes with trust reporting. And in the past, a trust only had to file a tax return on an annual basis, really, if they had tax to pay. And with trusts, it was really only for a formal trust arrangement or something that was made under a written agreement. What we're seeing coming into effect now, effective December 31st, 2023, so filings due now, is that we're expanding the scope of what a trust is to capture all of the unspoken trusts. So we're introducing this concept of an express trust, which is a trust relationship or a trust agreement that isn't necessarily a formal legal agreement or a formal trust document. Now we're including all of these potential arrangements into a tax filing, whereas we didn't have to include those before. We'll talk about all of these potential scenarios that people don't even think of that could constitute a trust arrangement and have a liability to file a tax return.
And so, first of all, good point there. They're broadening, you know, the definition of a trust, yeah, the scope. And am I correct? They're also asking that now you're going to have to file documentation on an annual basis, even if there is no taxable implications per se.
Correct. And with part of the changes, they're introducing this new schedule called Schedule 15, which is beneficial ownership. And the reason that they're making these changes comes down to transparency. They're looking for all of the arrangements where there's a separation between what the legal owner of some kind of property is and the beneficial owner of some kind of property to truly be able to identify who these assets belong to. So these changes are coming around as part of a broader change to try and crack down on money laundering, terrorism acts and funding and financing. So they're really trying to lift the veil of different ownership structures for assets.
I'm not necessarily a fan of having the government poke their nose in a lot of places, but those are a couple of good reasons. We'll come back maybe to CRA's execution on this front, but at least their hearts are in the right place in terms of what they're trying to do here. So let's start with some definitions. Let's just make sure we're all on the same page. Maybe the first one is a settlor. What is a settlor in the context of trust?
Yeah, exactly. So one of the important things that we're talking about with trust and some of these reporting changes that we're having in some of the schedules are introducing and defining and describing and disclosing who all of these key individuals are. So the first one you mentioned is a settlor. Settlor is one of the named individuals or the named entities that you have to include on this Schedule 15. And the settlor, in the simplest terms, is the person that contributes the property to the trust. So who has the original control of the asset? Who has that item that they're then putting into this trust arrangement or into a legal trust? You also have what's called a beneficiary. The beneficiary being the person that is entitled to all of the benefit of that asset. So the settlor contributes the asset to the trust for the sole benefit of the beneficiary. That trust is then controlled by a trustee or a controlling person or a controlling interest in that trust. So those are the two people, the types of people that have the absolute authority over the use of the assets that the settlor has contributed for the benefit of the beneficiary. So it's those four items: the settlor, the beneficiary, the trustee, and the controlling person, who's not quite a trustee but has some kind of influence over the trust itself. Like a trust protector is sort of an example of what that individual would be. But it's those four individuals that need to be disclosed on an annual basis with this new Schedule 15 for the beneficial ownership information of a trust. And with that, we need quite a bit of information on all of these individuals as well. So if it's a person, we need to know their date of birth, their address. If it's a non-resident, we also have to have their, if it's a U.S. person, we have to have their social security number in the U.S. If it's a resident here, we have to have their social insurance number or a business number. There's a lot of information now that we have to gather around these four key individuals. And sometimes they could be the same person.
Right.
And you could have a settlor who's also the beneficiary. You'd have a settlor right. That's also the trustee.
Or a trustee who's also a beneficiary, for example, as well.
Yeah.
And Connor and I were chatting just before this episode, and folks, I can tell you, I have gone through this process and it's not pleasant, and you're spot on. You need to have all this information for all the folks that you're going to disclose in this so-called Schedule 15. So you mentioned early on this in the conversation here, there's many types of trusts. And I think a lot of us, if you've created a formal trust that uses some sort of a trust document, some sort of legals, okay, got it. And you're aware of that. But then you use this term express trust, and even there's a term called a bear trust. And talk about that. What is that?
So it's probably the most important reason that we're talking is because of these bear trust arrangements. And a bear trust arrangement is any type of even non-written arrangement where there's a separation between the legal owner of an asset and the beneficial owner of an asset. And as financial planners, we get into a lot of these scenarios. You think about a very common estate planning technique where an adult child is maybe joint on a investment account or a bank account for an elderly parent, or maybe they're on title of their property. Legally, when you're on title, you're the legal owner of that property, but it's still mom and dad's house. We're doing it for an estate planning purpose. That's a very common example of a bear trust. And now we've seen so many of these that every single bear trust, with a few exceptions, has to now file a tax return, a T3 trust return, every year and include the additional information with Schedule 15.
And that was the shocking part for me because, as you said, say, you know, my parents are getting up there in age. I'm on their, you know, joint bank account. I'm named on it. And then understanding what's this concept of a bear trust, and bam, all of a sudden it's like, yeah, that would be me. I'm basically a trustee. I'm looking after things for them as they're, as I said, getting up there in years. And lo and behold, I've got to do this. I've got to file a T3. And the onus, if I'm not mistaken, is actually on the trustee. Is that typically the case?
It's correct. Yeah. So yeah, we really need to make sure that we're identifying all of these. And we like trusts as financial planners. We favor the benefits of putting these trust agreements in place because it has such a huge, huge benefit when it comes to estate planning and succession of assets. So we don't want to stop putting these arrangements into place because they are so useful. We now need to be able to identify when there's a requirement to file a trust return because there are some exceptions. And when we're looking at who needs to file, we can get away with a few things. So the biggest exception that we're going to be looking at in a bear trust arrangement is if the total financial assets of that trust, so if there's a bank account that you're on jointly with a parent, if the value of that account is $50,000 or less, then you're exempt from filing.
Right.
But it could be multiple assets because there could be a bank account and an investment account and a property. But now we get into a little bit more of a situation because the exemptions for the $50,000 limit are pretty restrictive in what is included in that amount. So it's purely cash. listed securities, so stock portfolio or bonds.
Right.
If you have property, you're joint on a house, then by default, you have to file. You're taken out of that exemption. One interesting thing is that a lot of trusts are settled with a gold coin or a silver coin, just a token item. Well, now there's an asset that doesn't meet the definition of this $50,000 cash, investments, bonds, because you have that gold coin.
Right.
So now just for settling it with that item, you're creating a requirement to file.
Because it's a gold coin.
Yeah. Gold coin.
Exactly.
It's cool.
And yeah. And so back to these exceptions, I think the terminology, these are called listed trusts. Is that correct? Is that?
Yeah. So there's, you know, listed trust has a very long definition. When we're looking at a bear trust, we're getting into that exemption threshold. But we also have a lot of common trusts that are sort of falling under their own section in the Income Tax Act. So, you know, mutual fund trusts, RESPs, which are, you know, an account held for another person, which is in itself a trust arrangement, but that falls into this exemption as well. Lawyers' trust accounts can right. fall into their own exception with this listed trust as well. And, you know, even if a trust that is a listed trust has to file because there might be tax owing, it doesn't necessarily have to file the Schedule 15. That could potentially fall out with some of these listed trust exemptions as well.
Okay. So you already touched on the information on the Schedule 15 of the T3, basically identifying all the players and their personal information, as we highlighted. And on the actual T3, what gets disclosed there?
Well, when we talk about a bear trust, nothing. And that's the interesting part about this, because a bear trust by rights has no tax payable. It can't, because it doesn't actually own the asset. It's not an entity that can generate income. A bear trust is really just, it's an agreement. It's an understanding. It's just that separation. So on the trust return itself, there's really no information that you don't have to necessarily report any income. You don't have to report any of the assets. When you create the trust and you register it with Canada Revenue Agency to get your trust number, you have to submit information on what the arrangement is. So if it's an arrangement for property, you have to identify what the property is, to identify who the settlor and the beneficiary and all of those key individuals in the trust when you submit the registration for the trust number itself. And then really the bulk of the information is going to be just that Schedule 15.
Right.
If it's not changing from year to year, though you do have to file the T3 with the Schedule 15, it should be a pretty simple task, because you know, you're setting it up, you're getting all the information, going through the registration process, identifying that a trust exists, which is going to be the hardest part. But on an ongoing basis, you're essentially taking the same filing and resubmitting it. So fortunately, on an ongoing basis, it's not going to be as tough of an administrative task.
Right.
But just understanding that it does need to be filed every year, and there's pretty stiff penalties for not filing.
Just going to say that, because I tend to be a bit of a procrastinator. Say I just like, I'm going to ignore this. What kind of penalties are we staring at?
You can get into a few issues, and it comes down to one. Did you know about it and not file it? Because that has its whole issue itself.
Right. Right.
But generally with trusts, it's a percentage of the tax owing. But in a bear trust arrangement, there is no tax liability. So they have a special penalty for instances where there's no tax payable. And it's $25 per day that it's late, up to a maximum of $2,500 per year. Now, Mike, you said that, you know, you're a procrastinator, so you knew. So you knew that you had to file a T3 and you just chose not to. In our world, that
could be seen as gross this?
Negligence.
Yes. Gross negligence, right.
So gross negligence has its own significant penalty.
Right.
When you choose knowingly not to file, you can look at a minimum penalty of $2,500. The maximum penalty for gross negligence and failure to file can be up to 5% of the value of the property in this trust. So say you're on title of a parent's property, it's worth $1 million. If you know that you should be filing and you just choose not to, it's a $50,000 penalty.
So something not to ignore is basically the message there. The penalties are stiff. There's no ways around that. Now, I understand there is a bit of a grace period. Is that true?
There is, because we're getting into this completely new requirement to file. And truth be told, going through tax season, we're finding so many more of these trust arrangements that we never realized existed with our clients. Because there's so much involved in this first year with just trying to identify and really do the right thing, they are waiving penalties for bare trust failure to file in 2024. Okay. So if there was an arrangement that existed in 2023, because again, this requirement came out for trusts as of December 31st, 2023. They're due 90 days after the end of the year. So they're due the end of March, beginning of April this year. They've extended it to April 2nd, which is the Monday of the deadline following the deadline. So we're not going to be able to identify all of these trusts that are, that existed last year by April 2nd. Right. So this year only, they're going to take an education approach and waive the penalty for bare trust failure to file. Again, it's only bare trust failure to file, as long as it's done this year. And this is the only year that they're doing it.
Okay. All right. So what guidance would you give the listeners? You've thrown out a lot of information, and I know the whole trust area is a complex field. What's the guidance you would give our listeners here?
See, you have to think about where your name is attached. So if you are on title of any account or asset, property, anything at all where you are not the true owner of it or not the beneficial owner of it, talk to your accountant.
Talk to your accountant.
If you're not sure if something might be this bare trust arrangement, it's better to ask the question than to take the chance that it could be and we didn't file.
Right.
It's as simple as looking at the tax slips that you're getting on an investment account. If you're getting a T3 or T5, there's a beneficiary code. Beneficiary code 2 is a joint account. If you're getting a slip that shows beneficiary code 2, joint account, but one of those individuals isn't claiming any of the income because they're not the beneficial owner of that investment account, that's a bare trust.
Right.
So it's really, you talk to your accountant. Your accountant is going to be your best friend through all of this, and talk to your advisor.
Right.
Is there something in your financial plan that they might have put into place for you to get an advantage from estate planning or succession planning? Or if there's any type of, you know, change of ownership of a property with maybe a corporation, if you don't want to have properties adjoined together, that's another common item. Just talk to your planner. Talk to your accountant. They're going to be the ones to guide you through all of this.
Great advice. Connor, thanks so much for this. Folks, as always, if you have any questions, and you heard it from Connor, but don't hesitate to reach out to your financial advisor. In this case, for sure, the accountant plays a very key role. And don't hesitate even to reach out to myself. Take care, everyone.